Sean Dukas here. Good morning, Sean.
Hi, Declan. Good morning to you.
Thanks for coming out. And I was saying in the promo earlier on that we're going to talk about cyber wars and things like that. But what about just in relation to sugar and the obesity levels out, the projections, it's not a fact, but a projection that we could be the fattest in Europe by 2030. And you've been looking at it from a scientific point of way, and probably controversial findings that part of it relates to breastfeeding.
Yeah, people don't want to hear that, but I think those statistics are extremely likely at this point, because the damning statistic is that ourselves in Britain, we're even worse than the British, are right at the bottom of the chart in terms, or the top of the chart, if you like, in terms of the amount of under fives, children under fives, that are either obese or overweight. So that's a ticking time bomb. And, you know, whatever about the adults, which is another thing, which is a problem as well. The kids under five, I mean, that's awful. So what's going on? Well, there are lots of different aspects to this, of course, but there's definitely one aspect to it is breastfeeding. In Ireland, and I'm not 100% sure why this is, but again, Ireland and Britain are similar as well. We have a tradition, if you like, I don't know if you'd call it a tradition, very low breastfeeding rates. So if you take another country and you compare it, for example, Germany, who always seem to do the right thing. But according to the World Health Organization, what you should be doing to protect your child against obesity is to be breastfeeding them for 6 months minimum. Okay, and then even after that, you should try and keep the breastfeeding going up until the age of two, along with obviously lots of other things that they're going to start introducing into their diet. And the statistic is that breastfed babies up to that point, if you keep going until 6 months, clearly it's not easy for everyone, I'm sure.
It's not. Yeah. There's women who can't express milk. There's all sorts of difficulties there. And as I always say in these things, you don't want somebody to feel just because they can't feed their baby that they're actually condemning them to the world of obesity.
I know. And in our family, like, we had that because take twins, for example, not easy to breastfeed twins. We had twins. So it was only a few days for Maria, I think, that she manages. So it is, I understand all of that stuff. But there are the statistics there as well that you have to look at. And that the statistics are the cold light of day, 25% less chance of obesity in breastfed babies. And the reason is, it seems, the scientists are focusing in on these high concentrations of protein that are in the little bottles that you get in the maternity hospital and you go home with big trays that we did. And now, the thing about it is, look, if you do that, it's not going to guarantee that your child is obese. There are other factors involved. But certainly, breastfed children seem to have something protective in there which is in there is you get a lot of these antibodies from your mother in the very early days. So even if you can't manage to get to 6 months, even if you manage to breastfeed for 3 days or say 2 days, you get this initial colostrum. And what that is that's the mother passing on all the antibodies that she's built up over her life against this, that and the other, and giving them a little kit, if you like, over to the child, and then the child is immune against a lot of these diseases. So even if you last it a couple of days, it's better than nothing, you know. So that's that one. Now, in Germany, it's amazing because the statistics there is that over 90% of the women manage to stick it out to the 6 months, about 10 weeks. No, well, 10 weeks is good. No, 6 months is further. But we just don't do that here in Ireland. So I know it's hard, but maybe, you know, just take that on board when you're thinking about it, when you're trying.
So there's a scientific aspect to obesity.
There is. There's statistics.
It's not just exercise and whatever meal and food you're eating, but there is science involved.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you've got a child that's overweight under the age of five, that is a serious problem. It's a combination of things, obviously. But the mother's lifestyle seems to have play a part in it as well. Her nutrition levels, her own level of weight, breastfeeding, all of these things are risk factors. And when you put them all together, then some people are very much more at risk than others.
Right. It's the cool scientist, Sean Duke, with us today on The Morning Show. show. Now, cyber warfare, that's out of movies, so bring it into reality.
Great films like Die Hard, you remember the rack'em, stack'em, pack'em when all the planes were flying above Washington, I think it was, and they were falling out of the sky, and it makes for great stories, and there've been loads of evil cyber criminals in films recently. But the question is this something that we really should be worried about, or is it all a bit of kind of Hollywood hype? Now, there's two schools of thought on this, but you know, if you take an analyst like Robert Lee, who's a guy who's at King's College in London, and he is working in this particular area for his PhD, and he talks about this, that what he's saying is that, look, you know, it's in the interest. What we should remember here is that it's in the interest of a lot of people that this threat is ramped up, because if there is a cyber threat out there, then there are securities that want to sell you cyber systems that are going to protect against all of that, and that it's incredibly difficult to actually go after an entire grid or an energy grid. But what seems to be much more likely, but the reason it doesn't get as much coverage is because it's a bit boring, is that individual companies, it's relatively easy to go in and hack in and get an individual company's data, or even maybe a government, single government department, and to take that data from there. For example, there was a good example recently of a company called Saudi Aramco, which is this big oil company, half American, half Saudi oil company that runs the oil industry in Saudi Arabia. And somebody went in there and they attacked these computers. They stole all the data, and there were all of these computers lying around the office that were just dead weight. So they hadn't physically taken the computers out, but they'd taken all the data. So there could be individual attacks like that. But you know, there was a controversial report about this where there was a think tank, one of these think tanks in America, that said the Iranians are up to all kinds of tricks, and that the Iranians are going to have a huge cyber attack on the West. So this particular think tank really got things going, because they said that the next Pearl Harbor, the next surprise attack that the Americans are going to face, is going to be online. And it's going to be this huge, colossal online attack, and it's going to knock out our power, our you know, all our air traffic control, the whole lot. So this got it going again this year when this report came out. But what seems to be the reality is that the Iranians are testing, if you like, the Western defences on various systems, but it's more like the burglar kind of scouting out the house and looking around to see where the vulnerabilities are.
Because they don't take in American software, do they not? They don't take in Microsoft or anything like that.
No.
Because they've got a boycott on it.
Exactly.
So how would they have all the innovations in order to build up the infrastructure to do all that?
Well, the Iranians, when I was in UCD, for example, in the 80s, there were quite a lot of Iranians that couldn't get into British universities because they were banned at the time. So they have a lot of people that have been trained in top universities around the world, in Europe and America, that are well capable of writing software or viruses that could cause problems. But the question is, would they want to? Because a lot of these systems are connected. These are global systems that you'd be attacking. So it'd be very difficult to attack the entire cyber infrastructure of the United States without maybe damaging yourself in the
right.
same way.
Mutually, so, what do they call it?
Mutually assured destruction.
Yeah. All right, the cool scientist is here, Sean Duke, and finally, Invisible Soldiers.
Invisible Soldiers, Ray. Another one for the lads here.
How many of them are sitting here now? we obviously can't see them, but how many now would be in the studio there, Sean?
It could be, yeah. You go through Shannon, you'd see maybe loads of them, but... But no, this is a serious thing, because this is constantly, you know, trying to hide from the enemy. It's an old thing, isn't it? And, you know, the stealth bomber trying to hide from the radar. So they've been looking at this invisible thing. Now, this isn't science fiction. This is, again, something that has been science fiction, but it's becoming definitely not fiction. For example, I remember writing a story about this at the time, 2006, so that's nearly 10 years ago. There was a chap in England called John Pendry, and he showed that it was theoretically possible to bend light around an object using very new materials, which he called metamaterials. So it's not that you become invisible, it's just that he was saying that, how about we deflect light around an object, whether it's a soldier or whatever it is, so that the light, when you see something, it's light reflected off that object that comes back and hits your eyes. But if that light is going around the object, it's not coming back at your eyes. Effectively, it's invisible. Okay, so it's like, you know, say in a wind tunnel, when the wind goes around the car, you know, that kind of thing with the light. So for about 10 years, it's been theoretically known that you can bend light this way. And it was just a case since then to actually make the materials that would be able to do this. The materials are out there that can bend light now. So you have this theory. How are you going to then transmit this into onto a soldier, so onto a uniform? Because we have the materials. So what the US military are looking for, if there's any geniuses out there that know these materials, they want materials that are effectively going to be invisible in all terrain and temperatures, snow, rain, without hampering a soldier's normal duties. The soldier's going to have to carry a little battery for this technology to work, but it's only about 0.45 of a kilogram, so it's not much. So they'll have that thing as a source.
Yeah,
there.
But that means that their own people can't see them either.
Oh, they'll have that figured out. It'll be like the infrared things that the Americans wear. They'll have that figured out. But what they look like, just to be curious, what they look like essentially is like walking camouflage, that they'll be able to manipulate the wavelengths of light. So if you're in the desert, they'll be like kind of ghosts. They won't be completely invisible, but you'll just see these little shadows there, you know, going around. That'll be more or less blended in. So it's like ultra-advanced camouflage. But it's coming.
Right.
It's coming.
It's coming, right. Let's hope that nobody has to use all these things.
It might be handy if you're hiding from somebody, wouldn't it? Non-military.
Many affairs could have on the go at that time now, John. Yeah. You'd know about those sort of things.
I wouldn't.